Reggie, you put a lot of mileage on that blue six-cylinder Ford Fusion of yours, and you've been writing a journey log about communities and places along the Kentucky River. After the July 28th flood, you went back and traveled the same routes that you had chronicled before to witness and write about the devastation and the experiences of people who survived it. It's a vivid account, and listeners, you can find a link on the homepage of our site, esweku.org. For this segment, we're picking up where Samantha Morrill left off in Hindman and the aptly named Troublesome Creek. Tell us about your observations in Hindman.
Well, Troublesome Creek ought to be called the Troublesome River. Mm-hmm. If you take a look at your terrain view in the map app on your smartphone, you can take a bird's eye view and then hone right in on how deeply in the mountains Hindman is and how far Troublesome Creek extends up in these crenulated mountains of eastern Kentucky. Right at Hindman, you have a left fork and a right fork, and they go for some distance. And when I went to Hindman, as I often do, I look for those junctions of creeks that come together to form that small, flat land upon which you might build a village, a home, or even a county seat. And that's what happened here. And it is a gorgeous spot in eastern Kentucky. And there's a bridge on the side behind the downtown, an old bridge that you can stand on, and you can look and see those two creeks, the right fork and the left fork, come together and form Troublesome Creek. And it's very placid. It's very beautiful with the hills in the background. But on the night of the 27th of July, Wednesday night, down those creeks came a wall of water as strong as iron, as angry as a monster, and with the face of the apocalyptic horseman. And they came and slammed into each other and then slammed into Hindman. And what was the main street of Hindman headed south along Troublesome Creek was a new lake, except a lake with rabid water, water that was surging forward from all of the rain that had hit all of the land surfaces on that left and right fork. And as it came down, it had power that you just don't attribute to water until you're in it. And then you recognize that's enough power to snap you in two. And it came into the downtown area, and it smashed into the windows of the Appalachian Artisan Center, the studios. And it just reached in, grabbed everything on that first floor, and swept it out in a violent fashion to thrust it down on Troublesome Creek to add to the troubles that were going to be moving down that creek.
Mm-hmm. And as you traveled down creek, or down river as it is, you came upon some communities we don't always hear about that had been really hit hard. Can you recall a couple of those?
Well, certainly. And when you're in Hindman and you move down Troublesome Creek, Troublesome Creek is really itself a long community, and it's fairly tight. And the impact of those waters was just terrifying and awful. Homes, not just mobile homes, homes that were constructed, all of them lifted up off of their mountings and moved down a stream to be smashed into each other and smashed into trees. When I came out of Troublesome Creek, I popped over to Hazard, and of course they had lots of flood damage in Hazard, but much of Hazard is a hill community, a knob community, almost like Cincinnati. So I went down to Blackie. Blackie had suffered damage down in the lower areas of that circular main street it has, that very cute area. Blackie's one of the secrets of eastern Kentucky and a lovely place to visit. And I followed the North Fork of the Kentucky River down, 588, I think it's called, down to come into Whitesburg by the side. And, you know, there was a lot of damage. Interestingly enough, the waters would peel the asphalt off. Some places it would just break it into chunks. In other places, it would peel it like it was a peanut butter sandwich.
Wow.
Very, very strange when you saw it.
Talking about a lot of force there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, when we look at those aerial photos that we've seen in the papers, we've seen on television and whatnot, The floodwater looks placid, looks, you know, very calm, but that really is deceptive, isn't it? You don't see the terror that's going on down there.
Yeah, you're right. And as we know from the experience in Whitesburg, you don't hear the emergency sirens. Uh-huh. And when you see it from an aerial view, as we did the first couple of days in the newspapers, we're aghast and we're troubled. But, you know, a couple of days later, you know, it looks like a bathtub. Let's move on to something else. Well, that was just one aspect of what looked like a lake that was actually a river. And underneath that surface, you have water that is not only soaking and deteriorating everything that it's coming in contact with, but it is surging forward, surging in a way that if you were to step into it, you would be swept off your feet and carried down. You know, we think that the damage is because of the lake water, when in fact, it's this moving, violent surge of water that will carry you away from your ability to control your actions. And it's a very short period of time until you're caught up in debris and smashed up like that debris.
We've heard a lot in recent days about the Appalachian community of southeastern Kentucky really coming together. Those of us who know the region are not surprised at all to hear that. But I think it's reinforcing to hear about it from somebody who might have heard it firsthand as you have. Can you give us some examples of that kind of community and sense of neighborliness?
It's stunning. There was a terrible loss of life. I think currently somewhere around 40. Mm-hmm. But when you drive through these areas and you see the extent of the damage, not those placid aerial lake photos, but the mobile homes that are wrapped around trees, cars that are on end. There's one place in Millstone where there is a pontoon boat that has been lifted up, sit on top of a car, which itself is on a trailer. When you see all of that power, it is remarkable, miraculous even, that the death toll was less than it was. And I think a lot of that has to do with the resilience of the people and the ability of the people in that part of Kentucky to immediately come together to serve each other. So in May King, for example, out in kayaks, John boats, you know, people pulling people off of roofs. An example that I'll even say is a famous example now is at McRoberts, up Wright Fort, right above Fleming Neon, and Neon just got clobbered from water coming down from McRoberts. Well, the lower end of McRoberts had a fine big old bridge leading into town. It just wiped it out. It blew it apart. It exploded it away. No way to escape. Those neighbors, within 2.5 hours, had commandeered a piece of excavating equipment, had routed a culvert that had been swept down, put it at the right angle, and started filling in rock and dirt so that they could get out of McRoberts and escape and get equipment into McRoberts to help with the cleanup. I was there, 10 days or more after the deluge. And I remember coming up to that, looking down, seeing that there was this crossing down at the bottom of the creek, nosing my car in, crossing it, coming out the other end, and just wondering at the strength of the people who, in the rain, in the devastation, in the tragedy, could pull that feat together.
Had the wherewithal. It's a wonderful reminder of the fact that we're talking about a can-do spirit, and not only that, in situations like this, a will-do spirit. Reggie Van Stockham, thank you so much for your recollections here, and we look forward to more in the future.
Thank you, Tom.